Yes, hi.
You look a bit sort of tanned. Have you had a spray tan?
No.
Have you been weekending in Monte Carlo?
You know what? I've realised that it's because I did a... basically, spring is in the air.
Yes.
Certainly in London.
So, yeah. That's not just a London thing, spring.
No, you know, that's, you know, you always say that, don't you?
We do get that at the same or similar time in the provinces. It's not the usual sort of 10-year lag, unless it is, and we're getting the spring from 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's at least a 10-year lag. Actually, okay, you're getting spring 2012 at the moment.
Our spring's is wearing cargo shorts.
Yeah, exactly. Your spring is still quite excited about the London Olympics.
Yeah, our local daffodils definitely seem quite pre-Brexit.
Yes, exactly. They will be. And it's quite sad and touching.
They know which side their bread is butters.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's nostalgia in a way, isn't it? That's partly why Londoners do like leaving London occasionally to go to places like Cornwall or East Cornwall, South Cornwall.
Because they own it.
No, but it's because you get the nostalgia of the old seasons.
I see, yeah.
And of course, the further west you go, the older the seasons are.
Yeah.
So on Lizard's Point, it's...
It's 1944, isn't it?
1944, Lizard's.
It's quite foreboding. There's that feeling of, like, maybe the war will soon end.
Yeah. Could turn around finally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Maybe Algernon will actually come home.
Yeah, exactly.
He said he'll bring me a Jerry's helmet. So why do you have a tan?
Oh, so, yeah, because spring is in the air. Mm-hmm. Certainly in London.
Yeah.
We've been through this, haven't we?
Yeah. Should we do that again?
Should we have another go at that? Another run of it?
Tiny
I enjoyed that. Yeah, spring is in the air. The rhubarb is high. essentially, there's rhubarb forestation, which sprouts intensely at this time of year. So there's rhubarb, you know, there'll be paving stones that have just been wrenched asunder by huge, massive pink strands of rhubarb clawing its way towards the sky.
Lots of big musical numbers as well, aren't they?
That's right.
During when the spring sort of starts to warm up the parks and paving slabs.
Big hot foot tap dancing, isn't it?
Pull me up the rhubarb is my favourite.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rhubarbs are coming.
Is that a rhubarb in your pocket? Yes. And I've also got a bone one. Classic. Classic wartime songs. This morning I saw a rat impaled on a rhubarb, which is something that...
which is one of the key omens, isn't
it's
it?
It's one of the key omens.
Yeah, so the omen of the fifth seal? I can't remember.
It's one of the big ones. Exactly. It's a rat impaled on rhubarb. Mm. I think it means we're going to have a good podcast. That's how I interpreted it. Obviously, give it a quick spin. Three counterclockwise, one clockwise. Mm-hmm. The rat, that is. Yeah, I think I went for a jumbo walk yesterday. That must be what it was, because of the spring being in the air.
Did you walk past a nuclear reactor?
I walked to Sellafield and back. The twin curse of the bald man, and it doesn't matter. Turns out it doesn't matter how many rats you impale on rhubarbs; it makes no difference. You're bald, you stay bald. But no, the twin curse of the bald man is very, very pale most of the time. So, for example, I can't pull off wearing anything south of beige on the colour spectrum, anything between beige and white, I just can't wear because I look so pale.
Okay.
So I can't wear cream jumper. Have you ever seen me in a cream jumper?
No, and I'm thinking about it. I've never seen you in a white tuxedo either.
Exactly. Even when we were in the 80s band together called White Tuxedo, do you remember? It was always weird. There was only one member of White Tuxedo who never wore a white tuxedo.
We all just thought you were trying to pull focus. Exactly. I'm not quite sure why you'd gone for burgundy.
And that really sowed the seeds that led to the end of the band.
Yeah. Before the recording of our first single.
Me and Mike weren't happy.
Cost a lot of those white tuxes as well. Set us back a bit.
They did, didn't they? But we still managed to get onto Robert Dimery's list of 1001 albums to listen to before you die. If you've got that at home, look up White Tuxedo.
I don't know if Mike knows this. Henry recommended a podcast to me called 1001 Songs Before You Die or something.
No, I don't know this.
And basically, it's these American men, and they appraise the is it 1001?
Yeah, there's a book called 1001 Albums to Listen to Before You Die by some music journalist, and they're going through them all one by one.
So every episode is a different album.
Yeah.
And, you know me, guys. I'm a naysayer.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. It's your default position is nay.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
But when they slagged off, whenever they slag off a British album,
yeah,
I bristle.
It really hurts you, doesn't it?
Do you really? What did they go for? Have they gone for the big ones?
So they slagged off, and this is not a band I like or even an album I think is good, but as soon as I heard five quite annoying American men slagging off Oasis's first album.
Definitely Maybe.
I was like, you fucking what?
There's five of them as well.
Oh, there seems to be five or seven or nine. There's so many of them. And they also have guests.
What is that? What is going on there? Is it? Does a naysayer not like it
when someone else is
naysayed upon?
I think I just became intensely nationalistic for some reason.
Oh, it was jingoism, was it? Okay, fine.
I think you felt it wasn't theirs to naysay.
Exactly that. And they just didn't really understand any of the context of why people kind of got into that at the time. That annoyed me.
Okay.
They just heard a very unaccomplished, plodding, lyrically ropey
pub band. Yeah.
That did not speak to Birmingham, Alabama, particularly specifically.
No, exactly. And while they were right in an objective sense, they sort of, I don't know.
Well, they were right in every sense, weren't they?
Well, but they didn't understand the mood.
No, that's true.
It's very mood-dependent music, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for some reason, they hit the mood, didn't they?
If you're trudging your way to your GCSEs in Leamington Spa, you got it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they also slagged off, again, another group that I'm not really a massive fan of, but again, I was like, no. They slagged off The Prodigy.
Okay.
I've not heard that episode, but I know that, I've heard that they did. They really, the other band they've absolutely ransacked, they hated, was The Smiths.
Yes.
Really?
What?
The Queen is Dead, they absolutely ransacked. They hated it. They just didn't get it.
Yeah.
They found Morrissey's voice annoying.
Mm. It's not annoying.
It's not annoying. Obviously, he's a deeply problematic figure now. But most people still stand by the album as being quite a good album, don't they?
Yeah, we didn't know that at the time, I don't think, did we?
Also, I think the thing with Morrissey was, he's always been that knob.
I think he's more clearly revealed the knob-esque nature of himself over the years. He was
a knob wearing a cardigan and holding a huge bunch of geraniums on top of the pops. It was quite unclear what type of knob we were dealing with.
They weren't geraniums.
We thought it was just possibly some sort of pop knob, and we could get on board.
A new cool kind of pop knob that we were actually quite excited about.
That might irritate the parental units across Middle England.
Well, were they not geraniums, mate?
Weren't they something? Were they gladioli?
Oh, yeah, they were gladioli. You're right, of course, because of all the simplism and stuff. And yeah. Was that actually a jingoistic thing? Probably gladioli, probably like a jingoistic flower or something.
Probably
in some way.
I think they're just nice and long, so you can, you know, if you tried to waft around a geranium, it would just.
No, you're right.
What is this? Yeah, I don't know what the significance is. There probably is some, isn't there? That they were born in the hands of King Ultrecht III of Anglia.
Yeah.
I went to the garden centre and bought some gladioli. Anyway, that was a bit of a digression, but it's quite a good podcast apart from that.
Do you like it?
I do. I think it's very good, and I don't want to criticise them particularly. And if our listeners want to listen to it, it's called 1001 Album Complaints. But it's one of those ones where, I mean, people will be well aware of this phenomenon, given that they're listening to this podcast. I listen to it quite a lot, and I do like it, but I find them all intensely annoying.
Mate, don't.
I know, yeah, don't pull that thread.
There might be a few kind of, moments going on amongst listeners as we speak.
There's a decent chance that a few of our listeners probably might find you two quite annoying. It's possible, isn't it? Both. You guys, it could be, yeah, let's face it. You guys are a bit annoying. The thing is, I like the podcast because I like listening to their American accents. I just like them. Mm-hmm. I also find it's pathetic, but I get a sort of thrill just because American people are talking about something British.
Even if they're slagging it off?
Even if they're slagging it off, weirdly. It's like they know...
Is it what you feel like you live in a relevant nation,
yeah, or something. It's pathetic, but I feel like
they know we exist. Oh yeah,
the Americans. After they've recorded this, they probably went to a hamburger restaurant where the hamburgers were brought to them in their car by a woman on roller skates.
Exactly.
America.
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 America. I'd like two tickets for the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
America.
Get me the DA.
A slice of old mama's apple pie down the Alamo in New York City.
Oh, just give up now. You'll never be an actor, Mr. Clemens.
Burgers. And like they love the Beatles. Just the fact that they just accept that the Beatles are the best band ever, basically.
I think that's almost more of an American position now than a British one.
Yeah, maybe it is, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying they aren't. I'm just saying that Americans really love the Beatles. Whereas actually in Britain, you've got more people now coming around to the idea that maybe Dua Lipa.
Mm-hmm. Is actually what it's all about.
Is actually what it's all about.
Or Ray.
Oh, there we go. Someone's got their finger on the pulse, haven't they?
Someone's got access to the BBC News website.
Well done, Ray. I've never heard your music. But you won 6 Brit Awards.
I think Ray was born in Tooting. It was from listening to the radio the other day.
Oh, did you feel a sort of vicarious bit of pride?
Well, a bit, but also because Tooting is where I sort of, that's the first place I lived with in Southwest London when I left home.
Hmm.
I think that was around the same time.
So in a little way, you
might be her dad. Is that what you're saying?
It was more, I was thinking more in the context of thinking how I've used my time as opposed to this baby who has achieved sort of extraordinary
things. Are you trying to say
things?
You've got a Brit winning R&B album in you?
I'm saying quite the reverse. I'm saying it's really, it's shone quite a stark light. Do you ever get that occasionally when, if someone is born at the same time as you or has been born long after you and has done something extraordinary, you never get that?
A sort of
comparison of...
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah. You do the age kind of, yeah, you go, oh, hang on, so that means...
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. The clock is ticking.
So Napoleon had already conquered Egypt.
Yeah. And I still haven't done the grouting in my bath.
I still haven't fully understood what grouting means.
So hang on. Napoleon had already won 6 Brit Awards.
Despite the fact that his record label hadn't been that supportive. But then you do that bargaining.
He had to go to war against Prussia to get out of his record contract.
You do that thing, but you do that sort of bargaining thing as well, where you go, yeah, but of course the fact is it was a different time then, and actually people were generally expected to invade Egypt a bit earlier than now. Whereas now, someone like me, I could probably still eat.
So what, you might even do in your 50s.
I could probably still eat. These days.
Could at least try and annex Malta, couldn't I, maybe?
Exactly. And people do that now. You know, yesterday I went for a walk, I saw a man in his 60s wearing a pair of really quite bright, colourful trainers. You know, things are different now. He might be on his way to a meeting to plan the siege of Malta. You know what I mean? For all I know, I sort of dread it now a bit when you read it. You know, a bit like when you've applied for a job.
Mm.
We're going back a bit, I think, in our lives. But I have applied for a few jobs where there was a letter or something involved, and I'd get a letter back, and there'd been a CV, and I'd,
there was advice about what kind of paper your CV should be printed on, and that kind of stuff. People had
all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'd been through all that. I'd written the interest section. Trying to get it all into one page was very important.
Your extraordinary range of interests.
Cinema. To an average level. Slightly below average.
Sacking Alexandria.
Taking possession of Persepolis. To
enter the space race.
We're all in the space race, Mike. You don't get to choose.
Okay.
We've all entered. You enter by being born. It's just how far you take it.
It's by default.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Can you opt out of the space race?
Yeah. No. Everyone's in the space race.
Okay. That starting gun goes off, the moment that you...
You're conceived.
Yeah. Do you ever do this, right? I once went into a job, I think it was for a temping position. So, obviously, it was things like, I'm proficient in Microsoft Word 1.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird the way they knew there were going to be more, even from the beginning, though, didn't they? Anyway, we're calling it 1. But I think I said proficient in Microsoft Word 1, which I wasn't.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. But I'd said that, and I went in once to this temping agency, And they made me do a test, which was a live Microsoft Word test. Did you ever have that?
Really?
So they sat me at a computer.
No, I did temping. I was never assessed.
I was assessed. Foolishly. They sat me at a computer and I had to do things like tabs. Do you remember tabs?
Oh, yeah.
I had to do that live and the computer was like recording it. It was absolutely terrifying. And from then on, the only jobs I got were through the agency involved lifting furniture. Didn't get any actual IT stuff.
And putting it down again or just lifting?
I got someone else in for that.
I was a lifter. Because you can break something when you put it down. They realised very fast that I couldn't be in charge of both.
You couldn't lift them high enough to break them.
Luckily. I was more of a slider. I was a pusher. You know that sound that happens in Indiana Jones films? When they open tombs. We've talked about it on the podcast before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was me with a chest of drawers in 1995.
That's where they got it for the audio library, was it?
I've reached a point in life now where it's like, I don't think I ever will master the tab, but I'm fine with it. Have you mastered the tab?
Do you just mean when it sort of bounces along a bit, like an inch or something, horizontally? What do you mean?
I love that Mike is still burning the flame for being the person who's less tech savvy than me. I love knowing that. Sometimes I have to throw out a little tester like that. Because I often think I'm bottom of the tech tree, but Mike is actually still a bit lower. He's dug a little hole around the other side of the tree and he's in there, upside down. Doesn't it what? And he's only wearing a little skirt. So I'll have a peek down there every now and then. It just makes me feel better.
You were saying about how applying for a job.
No, but I want to talk about tabs more with Mike now.
Okay, I'll recuse myself.
Come on, talk me through it. Jargon free, please.
Objection overruled then. Well, a tab is where the cursor it establishes where the left-hand flushing of the text block. The level, the depth of penetration into the page body.
Yeah.
That the left hand.
But that's one that makes it sort of grasshopper along, isn't it?
It doesn't bounce. Unless you've got like a child's version to make it more fun, where the cursor bounces a lot. Or do you make it bounce with the mouse? It just normally goes straight, left, right. But Ben, do you remember there used to be these little, like, the tabs? For some reason, I don't have to worry about this anymore, but there'd be a ruler across the top, and there was little triangles and also little oblongs. And if you dragged them, there'd be like a triangle and an oblong on the left and a triangle and an oblong on the right.
Yeah, I couldn't touch those because if I touched those, I'd ruin it and I wouldn't be able to use Word again. I'd have to throw the computer away and buy a new one.
And move town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, did you master those?
No, you don't touch those.
The little triangles. Because you'd pull them and all kinds of crazy stuff would happen with you. You'd end up with paragraph formations, which no one, unless they were advanced, no, like highly, highly mad, would ever want, you know, like completely bizarre like sometimes it could slim down an entire CV to one letter wide lines. You know, you'd end up with a kind of just a sort of tiny strip of letters going all straight down the page.
Yeah, it suddenly looks like it's a sort of 1915 code.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, or like something that might come down the screen at the beginning of The Matrix in green.
Yeah, with like a sort of like textual Brazilian. That's disgusting.
Sorry.
What? No, thank you.
Mean the practice of shaving all your pubes off?
Why are you bringing pubes into it?
Sorry. Okay, that's getting cut.
I don't think so.
Also, it's not Brazilian. I've got the wrong one there. Anyway, I'm not a pube person.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing. So, anyway.
Are you hairless? Are you naturally hairless?
In the days where I used to write CVs, do you remember some classic CVs? Do you ever come across your own CVs, like in a dusty old drawer? Did you guys do CVs?
Yeah, I had to do CVs.
Yeah, of course I did CVs.
Would you write curriculum vitae at the top or your name big?
I think curriculum vitae.
Good question. I think my name big. But I did write underneath curriculum vitae. I thought, you know, let's make the Latin sing.
And did you have a little Latin epithet for yourself? Ipso victorious, ipso dimdorius. Ipso facto, dimsum.
Bonjo, bonjo.
Bonjo, bonjo. A little coat of arms. That's what I did.
A heraldry is very important.
Some heraldry, a little mission statement.
Yeah.
pop-up section.
But yeah, little tip for any kind of 14-year-olds listening, writing their first CV, don't put Dim Dorius on it.
No. But Scratch and Sniff is still okay.
Scratch and Sniff is still okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Advent System, where you open up little... If you're applying for a Santa, for a job as a Santa impersonator, for example, Advent calendar system's good. Little doors you can open, if you can afford to get a chocolate behind one of them. Mm-hmm. That could help swing a job for you. Yeah, because there was always a kind of thing where if you... weirdly, you might say that you were proficient with Microsoft Word, but the CV itself was also telling the reader whether or not you were proficient with Microsoft Word, and because your tab skills were there for all to see. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So if your CV was, for example, 57 pages of one letter going down.
And if anyone actually could got as far as reading to the bottom where it says proficient with Microsoft Word 1, they probably would have had a wry laugh to themselves.
But I mean, they've got their eye in. They've managed to read it. Yes, or you've just printed out some sort of template, perhaps.
Yeah, that's it.
Apparently.
Oh, yeah, of course, the templates.
Mm. Name here.
And there was even things like... writing letters and stuff with the address. I did have just got on a sort of
covering
text nostalgia little sidetrack here, but date on the left, season on the right. Remember, there was a set way of doing it.
Mother's maiden name buried within the text.
Buried within the text.
And at the bottom, a little update as to how the campaign in Egypt's going. So
yeah.
It'd say, you know, we set sail from Cyprus tomorrow.
Mm. Supply lines are already stretched.
Morale is low.
Mainly because owing to an admin error, because I'm not that good at Microsoft Word, we've only got one helmet.
Right, let's turn on the beam machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Joe from Bremen in the Cotswolds.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Is tough guys.
Ooh.
Finally a topic that we can talk from the heart about.
How many Z's on that?
Classic tough guy question.
Or Z's to our American listeners. Guys. Are we tough guys?
Well, you're the beefcake of the crew, aren't you?
I'm the beefcake. Yeah, I've completed my beefcake journey, so I am a beefcake.
Is that what tough is? Is it the same as beef, or is it a mindset?
What is beef, a mindset or toughness?
Toughness.
Ideally, you're tough so that you don't have to be tough, but you can be. Toughness is about not having to be tough because you are tough.
What, as in, do you mean as in sort of repellent, as a sort of as a deterrent, rather?
I don't like to use the word repellent about my body shape. No, tough guys.
I don't think any of us is a tough guy.
No, I think it'd be hard. Yeah, be hard to argue that, wouldn't it? I think.
Well, what is a tough guy then?
Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
The Rock.
Tango and Cash.
But. Yeah. Keeping those references right up to
Errol Flynn.
Great shout. There we go. The original Vin Diesel.
If you compare Errol Flynn to a modern leading man.
What, the expectations of the modern action hero.
Yeah. They are completely different characters.
Well, in terms of like a physique, do you mean?
Yeah. Errol Flynn just looks like a bloke.
If anything, Errol Flynn looks like he could do with a bit of feeding up. Doesn't he, really?
Yeah.
Who, Errol Flynn?
Yeah, it looks like he could do with a bit more protein in his diet, you know. Maybe get some fresh air now again.
I've just found a photo of Errol Flynn where he looks exactly like Keir Starmer.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah, I think I'm looking at the same one.
Is he wearing a suit?
Yes.
Yes.
It's in full colour?
Yeah.
God, he does look like Keir Starmer.
Oh, good heavens. Yeah, I mean, that is bang on, isn't it? That's what Keir's gunning for. he's a beaut, isn't he? No mistake.
He was an absolute rotter though, wasn't he?
Was he really?
Was he?
He's got famously, his memoirs are famously sort of scandalous. I don't know the details, but he was like a real sort of scandalous cad. But it wasn't so much about how muscly you were, it was how thin your pencil moustache was.
Okay, well that dictated toughness.
That dictated toughness. And his pencil moustache was so thin and pencily. Obviously he was Robin Hood, wasn't he? So presumably He must have had some quite tough calf muscles, I'm thinking, did he?
He was a go-to action guy, certainly.
He just got really normal thighs. They're the kind of thighs that you'd see at a barbecue and you'd be like...
What, chicken thighs?
And you'd be like, oh, have those been... Did you marinate those yourself? Or was that like a from-the-packet marinade? And the host would be like, that's quite a rude question to ask. But actually, we marinated those for... You're supposed to do it overnight, but we just chucked them in the fridge for 2 hours under some cling film. And they've crisped up quite nicely.
I just want to say for listeners... Don't marinate chicken overnight. It doesn't stand up to it in the same way that other meats can.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it'll start kind of almost cooking in the acids of the marinade and create a kind of rubbery texture. Overnight just about might be okay, but certainly not for like 24 hours. And like, yeah, 2 to 4 hours is bang on.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
See, this is what real tough guys talk about.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nothing to prove.
The film trope that I don't think you get anymore, but was big, certainly 80s and 90s, was henchmen characters, sort of local toughs.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the main character would get in a fight with in like a dark alley and they'd be kind of wearing denim and leather jackets and that kind of thing. You don't get that anymore.
Just sort of miscellaneous toughs.
Miscellaneous tough bloke, yeah.
Mm.
Hey, dickwad!
Hey, you.
You. Yeah, exactly.
But, maybe that's partly because everyone is now a tough guy in terms of physique. The average physique, certainly.
Well, that's it. If you're casting The Rock in your action movie, how do you get from casting central, how do you get the guy who's 3 foot taller than The Rock and lantern jawed and more muscular? Can't be done.
It can't be done.
It's the tough
more steroids.
They've now got the main gig.
Steroids and AI managed. Pseudo human meat plants. Now, I do.
Yeah. And we're happy to take that to court, by the way.
Now, look, people talk about. I'm not interested in conspiracies. People say this is a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy.
The Rock was grown in a lab.
Which is why he doesn't have a proper name. He's called The Rock.
The only reason it happened so late is because it took them this long to build a big enough petri dish to begin the process.
Exactly. They had to build a petri pool, effectively, didn't they? An Olympic-sized petri pool to generate the human protein fibers, flesh molecules.
And that's why he doesn't have genitals or an anus.
That's right.
Which aids him in his impenetrable focus and is why he's so diligent.
He has a small green balloon, which has a nozzle which attaches to his left ankle, which at the end of every day's filming is filled up with, it's just a...
Sort of nutrient jelly.
It's a nutrient jelly and some chemical bicarbonates. And those are taken away by a scientist every night and they are taken to a facility deep, deep under the Hollywood Hills.
Just to pep them up?
And actually ground level because it... Deep under the top of the hills.
That was a clerical error at the beginning of the process that they realised with hindsight they could have saved quite a lot of money if they just use that free bungalow that was going for sale quite cheap on the foot of the hills.
And there was no need to build the huge megalift that goes down from behind the H on Hollywood sign down to the bottom of the hill because actually it's accessible from a car park on ground level. But anyway, the chemicals are taken there, aren't they? And there they're put into pools where the Rock's great-grandchildren, great-grandchildren are being grown.
Literally budding actors. They're literally budding actors.
Yeah. And there's an entire forest of them now. And it's this awful. This is why SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, are not happy about this at all.
That's why they went on strike, wasn't it?
That's why they went on strike. Because the future budding actors are going to be literal buds taken from... Mm-hmm. Sort of grotesque human actor trees, all of which have exactly the same genetic information as The Rock.
Which is a mixture of dolphin DNA.
Yeah.
And Brussels pate. Yep.
Brussels pate.
And a little soupçon of extraterrestrial debris was found.
That's right.
Floating in orbit.
And also one of those little sherbet spaceships.
Yeah, but again, that was an error. That was a mistake.
That was an error. That got dropped in by the nephew of one of the scientists. Also, that's why he doesn't have a human name. He's called The Rock. That's because it was decided by three of the scientists who did a rock, paper, scissors, didn't they, to decide who would name him. Mm-hmm. It was won by The Rock. Yeah. Well, the other scientists went scissors.
And the guy who chose Rock misunderstood the rules. Thought that he therefore had to name it Rock as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Similar thing happened with Rock Hudson.
Yeah. Very, very similar.
And the Scissor Sisters, of course. Yeah. Back in the day.
That's right. And of course, the film Rocky, which was entirely created mm-hmm. in that very bungalow, wasn't it?
And Paper O'Malley.
Who you're going to hear of very soon.
Oh, you're going to hear about.
Yeah. But none of those scientists fully understood rock, paper, scissors because they were all AI-generated scientists. That's mm-hmm. the other end of the story, which makes it even more sinister. So the subterranean, turns out it's ground level, human actor meat farm mm-hmm. is run by three AI-generated deep fake scientists mm-hmm. who aren't actually even real. So that's also one of the reasons that the rock, paper, scissors game took so long to do was because none of them had the right amount of fingers, which made it a lot harder to work out what is a rock. If you've got three fingers, what's a rock? If you've got paper, if you've got seven fingers.
Yeah, if you've got a suction cup for a left hand, then it's not.
Rock, paper, scissors is not a... Yeah, it was designed on the human template of a hand, yeah. not the AI template yeah. of a hand, etc.
Series of pipettes sprouting out of a wrist.
Yeah, or a sort of fleshy-coloured xylophone.
The Rock yeah. is extraordinary when you see him next to, like when he's on the sofa on like Graham mm. Norton, whatever, and he's next yeah. to someone who's a normal size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rob Beckett or Helen Mirren.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's extraordinary. He's not like a real man.
Yeah.
He's also extraordinarily talented, I think. He's in Moana, he sings. Mm-hmm. He can do it.
He's a businessman.
He's an all-round entertainer.
But that's being a real tough guy. For me, anyway. Look, I don't know what you guys think, but for me... You know, for you, probably, Mike, it's mm-hmm. a man that can, like, heft 3,000 bags of charcoal out of a service station.
How many crossbows can you carry? Yeah.
Yeah. For you, for you, Ben, a tough guy is probably, like, a man who can, like, headbutt his way through another man. Come out the other side.
Into a cockfighting ring.
Cockfighting ring. Where he can literally beat the other cocks at their own game. Well, actually, that's quite easy for a human, probably. But you still got to have the wherewithal.
Man versus rooster.
Henry, I think you underestimate how easy or hard it would be to take on a well-trained fighting cock.
Mm. Well, I've got the smell of a Patreon feature coming up. Our first proper video feature.
Didn't they have razor blades sort of tied to their legs? Wasn't that part of it?
Good Lord. Really?
The cockerels?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Flame-throwing beaks.
You know what? I'd be crying foul.
Oh.
Is that going to enamour me with the crowd? Probably not.
Or doing puns?
Yeah. They're probably like, tie more bacon to his willy.
Pepper his ass with seed.
So are you saying that you don't think I would win in a fight with a cockerel?
I don't think it would be as
easy.
Or who
would you bet on? Let's picture it. We're in the cockerel pit. So we're in a deserted warehouse. Mm. There's a baying crowd.
Yep.
Big handfuls of fivers being thrown around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of tough guys around.
Yeah.
Lots of tough guys. Probably like a contingent of Chinese businessmen. There's people from all over the world that have come. Yeah. There's Maharajas. Mm-hmm. There's billionaires from all over the shop.
There's a guy stroking a tiger. Those guys from Squid Game, those guys wearing the masks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The kind of billionaires.
Yeah, a couple of, yeah. Anonymous billionaires, yeah.
Judy Dench is there in a cage mm-hmm. hanging from the ceiling. No one's sure why yet.
Your old history teacher.
Everyone's old history mm-hmm. teacher.
Yep.
Andy Burnham.
And the band T'Pau.
Are T'Pau a band or is it just a...
Was it just a sound?
Well, no, is it just another name for Carol Decker? That's what I'm not sure of. Are there other members of T'Pau?
Well, this is the kind of murmuring conversations happening in the warehouse, isn't it?
Yeah, they can't tell who is standing next to her. And were they a keyboardist or a producer type, or are they just loitering?
So anyway, then the cages come out. Mm. First of all, the cockerel.
Yeah.
Dr. Sanchez. It's Dr. Sanchez himself.
In the blue corner, Dr. Sanchez.
This guy, I've seen this guy peck things to death.
Yeah.
That's his job.
That's his job.
His wings covered in glue and bits of broken glass.
That's right. To make him even more terrifying. Mm-hmm. He's got go faster stripes going up his talons. Mm-hmm. Doesn't need those anyway because he's incredibly fast.
He lays grenades instead of eggs.
They say he lays grenades. The crowd love that.
Dr. Sanchez. Dr. Sanchez.
And he's wearing a miniature but incredibly detailed, beautifully done replica of the helmets that were used by the Norman army during the conquest the conquest of Britain.
Because his doctorate's actually in ancient history, so that's and archaeology, so he knows all about
it. That's right. He really knows his stuff.
And from the neck down, a traditional Swiss milkmaid's outfit.
Who, me? Is that me?
This is still the rooster. This is the contrast that's so jarring and confusing.
It's the contrast that's so jarring with Dr. Sanchez. Again, it's a miniature replica, three to one, but it's a miniature to scale, but it's a miniature, isn't it? It's a miniature replica of a human milkmaid's outfit, isn't it?
Well, just to clear up whether he's wearing a chicken's milkmaid's outfit.
That's right. It's a human lad who's going for... Come on, they've had to be some...
fake rubber boobs. Had to stuff some fake rubber boobs in there.
Yeah, it's not a woke scene down at the old cockfighting room. People have been trying to improve things, but it does go over the line at times.
Because at the end of the day, it's a cockfighting room. Yeah. No matter what you do, you can't get away from the fact.
And now, you see that beady, cold, dead-eyed look in Dr. Sanchez's eyes? That's because he's a chicken. They've all got that look. That's just because he's a chicken. That doesn't mean anything. He's a chicken.
And all around, I imagine there's hens going crazy.
Oh, yeah. Hens are going absolutely berserk. Because the hens, they love them. They're cooing. If you think you've heard cooing before, you haven't.
You ever seen a hen throw a bra into a fighting ring?
Yeah.
It's quite a sight.
And again, those aren't actually chicken bras. Those are not, was a mixture, actually. They're supposed to be chicken bras, but there's a mixture. Some of them have got miniature versions of human bras. There's a whole range. Pinging is twanging of hen underwear, isn't there? And plenty of cockerels as well. He's big amongst cockerels and hens, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, of course. He's got a following, he's got an entourage, he's got the whole thing, yeah.
Well, and actually, one of the great things about Dr. Sanchez is, he does break down barriers because he's loved by all communities, isn't it? He's a great figure.
School breakfasts, that's his big thing, isn't it?
School breakfasts, he's been huge campaigning for 5 eggs a day, isn't it? But he wants children to have 5 eggs a day. Now, a lot of people think that's because he's got one wing in the chicken industry.
You've gone from Scottish to North England. It's gone south. It's the classic Henry Paxton migration.
That's his dream. That's Dr. Sanchez's dream, isn't it? It's 5 eggs a day.
Well, that's what he's fighting for. Mm-hmm.
That's what he's fighting for today. And in the blue-red corner, it's me.
Podcaster and illustrator Henry Packer. What's your walking music?
It's Funky Beethoven.
A fifth of Beethoven.
We should be barely audible over the booze. Mm-hmm. Please, show some respect for... Well, I know none of you actually have heard his podcast, but apparently, show some respect for them, for God's sake. Kill him. That's not how cockfighting works. Judy Dench is trying to claw at me through her bars. Hoik Judy Dench up another 6 feet. Hoik her up. Higher. I'd probably just be wearing my 3 Bean Salad merch, I think. Any chance to get it? Yeah.
3beansaladshop.com.
With my dying words. As Dr. Sanchez launches himself down my esophagus.
Yeah, I think Dr. Sanchez is likely to have more tenacity in the fight than...
Yeah, I mean...
Also, Dr. Sanchez is riled up because he did buy the 3 Bean Salad jigsaw and has found it so hard.
So hard.
Especially the edges.
Yeah.
Which are normally the easy bit in a jigsaw, but for some reason Henry made them impossibly hard.
The edges are the one thing you can hold on to in a jigsaw. In the chaos of a jigsaw, you start, the one thing you've got is the edges. You start with the edges.
Yeah,
but not in a 3-bean salad jigsaw.
Not in a 3-bean salad jigsaw.
Yeah, so you've really screwed with his mindfulness for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
So Dr. Sanchez is really, really angry. Yeah.
Can I just say, when people send us emails or social media posts, which happens quite a lot, when they've completed the jigsaw, I love getting those emails.
Yeah.
So keep them coming.
the feeling of accomplishment was huge.
You're getting vicarious pleasure. You're getting...
Yeah.
Okay. It's nice to know that it is possible after the initial feedback.
Feel free to forward those to me, the actual creator of the jigsaw. Thanks. Ben, those emails?
Well, you say forward them to you. They're not going to my personal email. They're going to the Three Bean Salad email, which you have access to.
Yeah. Okay. But which I've just revealed I see you as the administrator of. Okay, fair enough.
And that's why I've employed Dr. Sanchez for this fight.
And that's why I'm the one being eviscerated by a chicken right now. And you're the one. You're in the posh seats, aren't you? You and Mike, you're in the glass, behind the glass. In the kind of the executive lounge.
Yeah. Canapes and Prosecco to wash it all down.
Angela Merkel.
Angela Merkel. And you're actually watching, you're sort of half watching the bear, aren't you? On the flat screen, and they're only half watching the fight.
You mean the drama of the bear rather than a bear that's also in the fighting
situation? It's going to come and clean up whatever the chicken's left behind.
If I do fight my way through the chicken somehow.
There's a bear in the dressing room.
Yeah. And by the bear, we mean the actor Jeremy Allen White. Wearing nothing but a pair of dagger-covered Calvin Klein underwear, Calvin Klein briefs. Okay, if I did have to fight a cockerel, what I think I would do is I'd go straight for the neck, because you've got to try and wring that neck, isn't it? I mean, that's how you take down a cockerel. You wring its neck.
I don't think you're getting near it. I think it knows that. I think it's coming at you talons first.
I hate being pecked, and I also don't like being clawed at by talons.
Mm. What about talons with razor blades sellotaped to them?
Even worse.
I live within probably 5 miles of an original 1700s cockfighting ring structure.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that sort of first date place you used to?
Have they kept it open as a sort of kind of curio, a sort of museum?
It's part of a museum, the Museum of Welsh Life in St Fagans. Mm. Fantastic place. And it's really good. It's made of slate, I think. It's got a thatched roof.
Nice. Oh, this first date is absolutely... It's perfect.
And when you go in there, it's like... There's deep cultural memory in there of things, bad things.
Can you feel the...
Yeah.
It's in the air, is it? That sense of... Yeah.
The slaughter.
Oh, the sense of cockerel slaughter.
The broken beaks.
Mm. Yeah. Shattered talons.
I think you would win, ultimately, Henry.
Yeah, thanks.
But I think you'd get slashed, and then maybe those slashes would get infected and you would die.
Mm. Yeah. Of chicken flu.
Yeah.
That's how Dr. Sanchez gets you. He always gets you in the end.
Yes, I think you'd probably wish that there'd just been a clean cut to the neck.
Yeah. Just incomprehensible egg after egg after egg out of my neck.
Yeah.
Out of the hole he made in my neck.
Mm.
Also, there's the day when my feet start becoming a bit sharp. My toes start getting a bit sharper.
Yes.
And there's the day where...
You find you're drawn to seed.
I'm sucked drawn to seed. My arms start to sort of fold in at the sides. People keep on commenting on how I'm clucking my approval at things. And then the day wakes up where I look in the mirror and I'm basically looking at the new Dr. Sanchez. Yeah.
The first ever bald rooster.
Oh, I'd hate to see a bald rooster.
Especially if it was a former colleague. Yeah.
Okay, time to read your emails.
Yes, please.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
My beautiful horse.
This is an email from Frank from Bayside, Nova Scotia.
Ooh, nice. Wow.
Bayside was the name, I think, of the town where Saved by the Bell was set.
Really?
I think it was Bayside High, but I don't think he was in Nova Scotia.
Hmm.
Can I say, Nova Scotia is one that's... I think I might need a mnemonic.
Mm-hmm.
For certain places. Nova Scotia is one of these places where whenever I hear it, I go, I can't remember, I don't know where that is, and I sort of maybe Google it and then forget again.
It's in Canada.
Bottom bit of Canada. Southeasterly chunk.
that's quite forgettable, isn't it, that? you know the mnemonic we came up with the other day for
actors?
For Hugh Bonneville.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman. Who was the third one?
Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, Branagh.
Because he was branding.
Yeah. He was branding
Gene Hackman's
bottom. Yeah. Gene Hackman's bottom. And yeah. He's hacking away at the chocolate that Hugh Bonneville is nibbling on.
Yeah.
Okay. But maybe I should picture that happening.
Do you want to incorporate all of the provinces of Canada into this?
you must have heard of Kenneth Branagh's famous Canada back tattoo. He's got all the provinces of Canada tattooed onto his back. That's why you'll never see him do a topless back scene.
But how is that? Yeah. How is that helping you know what the states are?
Well, I'm just picturing Nova Scotia, bottom right. Yeah. Of Canada, mm-hmm. and it's tattooed onto Kenneth Branagh's back.
Mm-hmm. So it's probably kind of his lower shoulder blade, Nova Scotia, I'd imagine.
Well, how low down is the tattoo going?
Dangerously low, let's put it that way.
So it might be a sort of waistline, maybe panty line.
Yeah. Okay. Is Nova Scotia like a province or is it a little island?
Province.
It's probably about the size of Britain, I imagine.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of them. It's one of those places that is sometimes used to denote somewhere that's far away, yes. Like Timbuktu, which is another one where I don't know where that is.
Yeah, because it pokes out into the freezing cold North Atlantic, right, yeah. Choppy, unforgiving waters is what I think of with Nova Scotia.
And crab fishermen.
There's another element of toughness right there, like the level of toughness you would need to be a fisher on a trawler off Nova Scotia.
Right, that's, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Your hand, just calluses all over.
Right? Yeah. It was like, no, yeah. Was it hard? Was it a tough journey down the garage to get some bags of chocolate? It was like Nova Scotia out there. That sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
People use it in a phrase?
Sure.
Like that?
Yeah.
Ben, you said crab fisherman.
Yeah, crab fisherman.
Is that a phrase?
Well, yeah. It is what it is, isn't it?
It's quite weird that it's crab fisherman, whereas a fit crab isn't a fish.
Oh, so they could just be called crabberman.
A crab crabberman.
Hi, crab crabberman. Great to meet you. But I do think Nova Scotia is a big crab zone, I think.
Is it?
I mean, everywhere's a crab zone, that's the thing.
Everywhere's a crab zone.
They're really into the crabs.
Okay.
So Frank in Bayside, Nova Scotia writes, Hello Beans.
Hello Frank.
Hi.
I was sitting by my brother's pool in Porongo, a suburb of Santa Cruz. So that's not in...
No, sir.
No idea where that is.
Canada, again. I would assume. But there's lots of places called Santa Cruz all over the place. So who knows where that is.
Okay.
Catching up on the Beans podcast, when I heard something about dictators hanging around the Iglesia La Macarena.
Oh.
Having just arrived from Canada, I was excited by the coincidence, so I jumped into an Uber and went straight to the church. So hang on, is this in Bolivia?
Also, is this wearing swimwear?
So we talked about Hugo Banza, and
we did. Yeah.
We had a listener who met Hugo Banza at a church where he was having communion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this must be in Bolivia.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
I guess so.
Anyway, so he sent us 5 photographs of this church in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
He writes, as you can see, the place is completely dictatorless, unless the kind-looking woman who is ironing the garden had some hidden ambitions. Who's ironing in the garden?
That's a classic dictatorial state when you have to iron the gardens. You know, you're in a serious autocracy.
Completely creaseless lawn. Or your head on a stick.
The only remarkable thing about this building is that it is utterly unremarkable. While I cannot be certain, I'm pretty sure that I'm the first ever tourist to visit it. I pushed on to the cemetery to make sure that Banza is indeed dead. I've included a pic of his grave.
Golly.
Oh, wow.
Addendum, my brother Tim tutored Banza's granddaughter when he first arrived to teach in Bolivia almost 3 decades ago. Ooh. Apparently, he paid well.
Nice.
That'd have been a bit nerve-wracking, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Tutoring Hugo Banza's granddaughter.
Oh, waiting for those exam results. Good God.
But of course, Banza would have the whole musical establishment in his pocket, wouldn't he? In terms of... Like, in fact, I can imagine an excruciating concert by Hugo Banza's granddaughter.
There's a standing O, isn't there? You know, there's all a standing O at the end.
Standing O every time. All the great and the good are gathered.
Yeah.
Having to sit through an absolutely excruciating...
A grateful violin piece.
I don't think he's a music teacher.
Oh, I see.
Well, he could be. He didn't say what subject.
I thought you said music teacher.
Okay, final email is from Harry.
Hello, Harry.
Hi, Harry.
Dear Beans, your recent circus episode reminds me of a childhood memory of a trip to the circus I made with my mother that I'd thankfully forgotten about for almost 20 years. Some context. My mother was born in Senegal in West Africa and came to the UK when she was 19. Her understanding of Britain was based on old Hollywood movies and general brand Britain that was portrayed abroad. Fast forward 10 years and she is taking me and my younger sister to the circus and we are all very excited. As the show goes on, I remember her becoming quite irritated and muttering under her breath before she finally shouts out at the circus master in a heavy West African accent, brackets, let's hear Henry do that. She shouts out, "Where are all the freaks?
Wow.
Where are the lions and elephants?"
We were promised this as part of Brand Britain. The freaks.
Freaks and the elephants.
The bearded children.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I don't remember much after that, but feeling a level of embarrassment that could kill a seven-year-old boy as people around us turned to look and the host fell silent. I've never been to a circus since. But looking back now, in her defence, those are the best parts of a circus, right? Yours truly, Harry. Thanks for everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
For the second week running, we've got a Patreon jingle sent in by a listener.
Ooh.
This one is from Oscar.
Thank you, Oscar.
He writes, as a long-time fan of the podcast, it's always a joy to hear other listeners' renditions of your many jingles. But one that seems to have gone without the reverence it deserves is the ominous Patreon advert. I've decided to remedy that by interpreting it in a synthwave style, worthy of its foreboding tone.
Lovely. Yes, please.
Thank you very much.
It's time to make the film.
Very nice. That's
really good. Really sinister.
That's brilliant. I'm picturing like a hot sort of, like it reminds me of the film Drive a bit. Was that the kind of thing?
Yeah, it's definitely that vibe.
Yeah, I'm picturing like LA sort of like highways with palm trees and like a kind of vermilion dawn,
yeah,
or sunset in the background and kind of like
hot pink clothes.
Hot pink clothes. Yeah, and hot pink dawn and hot pink blood. Spattered on the bonnet of my hot pink Chevy, but a slightly different tone of hot pink,
so you
making it visible.
It, yeah,
so otherwise it wouldn't be visible. So just like really hot pink,
yeah,
blood on an averagely hot pink Chevrolet bonnet. Brilliant, thank you.
Yeah, brilliant.
If you'd like to sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/threebeansalad, it's the place to get our bonus episodes. But if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike. From the Sean Bean Lounge.
Indeed you do, yes.
Where Mike spent the whole weekend, didn't you?
Well, it was a big one over the weekend, you see.
It was, wasn't it?
Pretty exhausted, to be honest, but it was worth it. Because, of course, over the weekend it was the
I Can't Belize It Central America Festival, wasn't it?
It was, Ben. Thank you very much. And here's my report.
It was the I Can't Belize It Central America Festival last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. This year, Jade the Vet and Finn the Dog had the honour of choosing the sub-theme, which was recreating the notorious 1996 Costa Rica-based Alaband Family Vacation Jamboree, celebrating the golden wedding anniversary of Jacqueline and Theodore Alaband. Louis Fix, Sean Murray, Robert Harriman and Emma Graveson portrayed the Missouri wing of the family, who accidentally booked transport to the Costa Rican seaside offal resort in Kernville, Oregon, and actually had a pretty decent time eating heap upon heap of deep-fried chitterlings. James Oliver and David Gareth Walters portrayed young Iowan cousins who insisted on driving from Cedar Rapids to Costa Rica in a bootleg Pontiac Firebird and were never seen again. The remaining Bean Loungers portrayed family members who actually made it to Costa Rica, with Jessica Cowley bravely taking on the role of Uncle Wilbert, beautifully performing his now infamous speech in which he explained why he had booked the holiday at Medio Queso, blindsided and thrilled by the fact that the place name meant half cheese. He had failed to dig deeper and realised their accommodation was in the middle of a freshwater marsh and a difficult 100 miles from the nearest beach. Leroy Larson and Tom, beach towels under their arms, played the Dodge City brothers who'd never seen an ocean before and determined to march east until they found the beach holiday they were promised and were never seen again. Philip Lowry and Becca Matthews depicted a brother and sister from Jefferson City, who were there to represent a section of the family spawned by an affair Theodore Aliband had in the mid-50s during his time in the National Guard. They also set out, snorkels in hand, for a beach holiday, but headed west and were never seen again. Brian Crowther played Jacqueline Aliband's much younger brother who went in search of a grocery store and was never seen again. Ross Wakefield, Jordan Collins and John Coyne played Alibands who were seized by a mangrove swallow, a green heron and a yellow-breasted crake respectively and were never seen again. Grace and Tig portrayed septuagenarian siblings who tried to find firm enough ground in the vast wetland to set up a game of swing ball, accidentally fell into Nicaragua and were never seen again. Jamie Bridges played Theodore Aliband's nephew who dodged the Vietnam Army draft by volunteering for the Marines. He thought assimilation was the only way forwards and set forth to learn the ways of the red-eyed tree frog. He was only ever seen once again, but that was as a still photo on a Panamanian news bulletin, which we can all agree doesn't really count. Ruya played Tootsie Aliband, a failed dancer who tried to work out how to switch on the hot water and was never seen again. Joe Weston played the only non-family member on the trip, Sidney Horton Jr., Jacqueline's nurse, amanuensis and general factotum, who bent down to do his shoelaces up and was never seen again. Jacqueline and Theodore Aliband themselves were portrayed by Megan Rafter and Matt Regglesworth, who perfectly rendered the golden couple's decision to cut their losses and declare Medio Queso an independent micronation, and who were last seen taking potshots at the Costa Rican wetland rangers, faithfully portrayed by Ray Wynn and Dan Weston, and the Costa Rican birthday battalion, played by Tess Tickles and Brother Benj. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the podcast. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by a listener. This is from Rosie.
Thank you, Rosie.
Thanks, Rosie.
Hi, Beans. My friend Hannah recently introduced me to the podcast, and I've been enjoying working my way backwards through all the episodes, memento style.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Like many other people, I took up the ukulele during lockdown and haven't played it since. I thought this would be a good excuse to literally dust it off and do you a theme tune in the style of the twee backing music to an advert for a bank or something. Enjoy, Rosie.
Thank you, Rosie. Perfect. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, bye. Omnibank. Secure future, safe investment, happy children.
That was great.
Thank you.
It is, I would say, I think that is my least favourite genre of music.
Me too.
Of all music.
Yeah. At Omnibank, we're always watching you. Even if you're not with Omnibank. But if you join us, we'll watch you a little bit less. That's right. Yeah, that is my least favourite form of music.
It's my favourite form of music. Thank you, Rosie.
No, it was from the point... Rosie did a great job of that.
Brilliantly done by Rosie.
But it is an abhorrent genre.
When you hear that music, you know that you're being fleeced by a multinational. Yeah. Because it's trying to say the exact opposite. It's trying to say, I'm just a person. Maybe I make my own cookies and I sell them in a garden centre or something. But it's not, isn't it? It's trying to say. Yeah,
it's not wearing a chunky knit and some beads. It's wearing a Savile Row suit.
It's wearing a Savile Row suit.
It's got a rapier and its cane.
Yeah. And it owns a lithium mine.
And its hands are just it's just got swords for hands coming out of the suit.
That sounds quite whimsical in a kind of ukulele way, though. Oh, look at me. I've got swords for hands.
Oh, I'll let me chop your quiche for you with my sword hands. Enjoy the quiche. Have a lovely time. Help yourself to courgettes.
Wonky courgettes.
Help yourself to wonky courgettes. And I've got these. I never got these sword hands. People think it's sinister, but it's not. Oh, yeah. Do you want a massage? Probably not. That's a joke. You don't want a massage from me. I will kill you. Yeah, I can't actually hug people.
But I can slice a quiche.
But I can slice a quiche.
Provide it's on the correct surface.
Yeah.
And someone else has unwrapped it for me. Or baked it and put it on the chopping board in the first place. I can't serve it. I can't slice it.
I can slice a quiche. I can't fucking make a quiche.
Oh, you can slice a quiche as well? Can you? All right, okay. Well, I'll just go then, shall I? Yeah, yeah, fine.
It's funny because I've always seen the sword hands as a negative thing, but then I started to see them as a superpower because I can slice quiches. But you've just reminded me that fucking basically anyone can slice quiches. So thanks for that.
I'm just going to go off and take a walk on my own, pick my nose and see what happens. Cheers.
Yeah. You've really burst my bubble, which is actually another thing I can do.